The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox drop game two against the Athletics, 4-3, the final, a late ninth inning rally thanks to a Connor Wong two-run homer. But unfortunately, it fell short. Red Sox lose by one run yet again. Kind of same old story, you know, that we're used to. So a tough loss to the Red Sox tonight. Then obviously more fallout from the Curtis Mead trade, Curtis Mead's injury, and now that we know what it is, we'll see if his season is potentially in jeopardy. So we'll get into that as well. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I've got Juan and Terry alongside. Let's start with the game. We'll get to the Curtis Mead stuff in a little bit, but obviously, you know, Red Sox were a bit punchless tonight. As Terry said before we started, just not much offense until it was too little too late. So Juan, I'll start with you. A loss like this kind of reminds you of the early season struggles, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It was an incredibly frustrating loss because they had so many opportunities to score. And I really land this loss on two guys specifically. And we talked about it before the show. Roman Gonzalez, I mean, what does he have to offer for this team? How many opportunities, how many chances did he have going out there with runners in scoring position and either popping out, grounding out, or just doing absolutely nothing? Empty at bats. I mean, Rafaela at the end there, those three swings, some of the most pathetic swings that I've seen, especially today. They had so many chances. Jake Bennett, you can say, didn't have his best stuff, but he only gave up three runs. And we always go back to this with the starting pitching. You know, you don't have to be perfect. And he wasn't perfect today, but he gave this team a chance to win. But the offense just simply didn't back him up. So when they lose these types of games and then they come at the end and they have like this late run, Connor Wong hits a two-run bomb that should be a tie game if not for Chad Tracy basically punting the game in the eighth inning by bringing in Watson. They had so many opportunities, and it is really frustrating to see this team lose in this manner. But hey, it's 1-0. Get your head back in the game tomorrow and try to, you know, take game three.
So let's go back to last night real quick. That big inning happened because the A's botched what should have been a double play. The second baseman didn't cover the bag. The inning continued. The bases got loaded. And then Seydon Rafaela hit a minor league ballpark grand slam. And, you know, and the Red Sox caught a break. And you're going to catch breaks over 162, and your opponents are going to catch them. But, you know, circumstantially, they were lucky to win the game. Tonight, it played out the same way. One-run lead for several innings. Red Sox had opportunities, like Juan said. And then, you know, the A's got to the bullpen. I think it was Moran first, right? They put one or two up on Moran. I think it was two, actually. It was a two-run homer. And then Watson, you know, added another run. So, you know, the 15-game streak, that team with that vibe and that momentum steamrolls Oakland these last two games. Didn't happen. And, you know, I don't expect Jake Bennett to be a stud every time out. He only had, what, four strikeouts, something like that, two walks. Wasn't super electric. But I don't know. You know, I said recently we weren't as bad as we were in April and May, but I don't think we were as good as we were during the streak. I think Charlie pointed it out. you made history with Caleb Durbin, Wilson Contreras, and whoever the next man up happened to be on any of those 15 given nights. You know, it was Siegler, it was Rafaela, it was Abreu. And then you look back, you know, Manny and Poppy hit third and fourth for 6 or 7 years in that lineup. They never made this type of history. So just ask yourself, who are the real Boston Red Sox?
Yeah, I think it's more what you saw tonight, because it's a lot of 4A players, right? Guys like Siegler and, you know, for a while there, it was guys like Chang, Monasterio. Like, these are not guys that are consistent enough. And that's the problem. It's that you can go through a really good winning streak like they did, but it's fluky because they're all very streaky hitters. This entire lineup outside of Wilson Contreras is streaky hitters. You saw it even with Rafaela Juan. You brought up that at bat. I mean, that was horrible. Like, he looked like he just completely forgot how to play baseball. And Sadon's been one of your better hitters this year, but he's still streaky. He can still have those at bats where he looks like the Sadon that, you know, came up a couple of years ago, and people say, "Oh, this kid's going to strike out 200 times a year," and you know he can still look like that. You know, and then on the pitching side, Bennett, not his best stuff. It was actually, he was the one that got tagged with the 2-run homer. It wasn't Moran. Moran had a clean inning. But yeah, that was Bennett. And that was, you know, sort of towards the end of his outing. You could tell he was running out of steam and gives up a 2-run bomb to Brian Severn or whatever his name is, the backup catcher who is only there because Shea Langeliers is hurt. So it's not like their best hitter got you. It wasn't Nick Kurtz. It wasn't Soderstrom. It was their backup catcher. So it's just, losses like this are frustrating. That Oakland team, well, I keep calling them Oakland, Sacramento, whatever they want to be, they had lost, I think, something like 24 of their last 30 going into this series. Like, they have been completely free-falling. It's one of the reasons why you were able to leapfrog them in the wildcard race so easily is because they've just been had a horrid couple of months. And, you know, so you lose a game like that tonight, it's super frustrating. And I think the biggest second guess is the Ryan Watson thing. You're only down by 2 runs, and you bring in Ryan Watson. That guy should not be pitching unless you're either up by 8 or down by 8. That is not someone you bring into a high leverage situation like that. And I don't know if, you know, certain guys weren't available, and that's, you know, Tracy felt like he was the only option. But in a game like this, and look, you only gave up the 1 run, but that 1 run made a huge difference. You could have had a tie ball game in the 9th inning, thanks to Connor Wong. And unfortunately, it came with 2 outs, and then, you know, Siegler comes up, and that's the ball game. So I think what you're seeing is that the streak was great. It was a lot of fun, and I still think this team does have a lot of fight in it. I'll give them credit for that always, but they're just not quite good enough. They're streaky, they're inconsistent, and that's what happens when you field a lineup of mostly 4A players. Yeah, it can be fun sometimes, and they can, you know, they can be plucky, but then you get other games like this where they look completely helpless against a very, very mediocre, I'd say even below average pitching staff that the Athletics have. So, you know, as Juan said, like, yep, you know, it's one loss. So, you know, get back at it tomorrow. You've got to take as many of these games as possible because I don't think that Dodgers series is going to be going your way. So you really don't want to be dropping too many games against teams like the Athletics, but unfortunately it happens. And you know, tonight was just one of those frustrating games where the offense just didn't give you enough.
Yeah, Chad Tracy just needs to stick to what's working. I'd rather have guys there that can put bat on ball. Yoshida, Siegler has been, you know, obviously playing his part in this team here. Those are the guys that you need in that lineup. I don't want to see Romy Gonzalez anymore. I don't. You're depending on this guy. You're depending on a version of Romy Gonzalez that is not the version that we have right now. He was injured, only played, 18, 17 games in the minor league before you brought him back up. That is not the Romy Gonzalez of the past. So you have to let that go and stick to the guys that have been performing for you, that have been getting things done, which is putting bat on ball. You're not asking them to hit home runs. You're not asking them to be Aaron Judge or Shohei Ohtani. You're just asking them to play baseball, and those guys have been doing it. What happened once you put him into the game? They put bat on ball. Yoshida, Siegler, that's what they do. So you stick to what's working. Hopefully, Chad Tracy does that, you know, moving forward, sees what's working, stick to that. You don't have a winning streak that you have to rely on anymore. You're just trying to win games because, of course, you are in that second wildcard spot. So you are fighting for the playoffs. You are one of the teams that's in it right now. Do what works best for your team until, of course, Craig Breslow brings more talent onto this roster.
It's interesting because that streak happened at a time where it kind of forced the Red Sox hand to be sellers. If this streak happens in May, and then, as Jason says, water finds its level, we're probably having a much different deadline. But the timing of it, it doesn't matter how good or bad. We could lose every game this week and we have to be buyers. That's what the optics will dictate, is that the Red Sox are buyers. And what type of stuff are we going to be buying is the thing. So I don't want Anthony Siegler to be part of a playoff run. If we're able to acquire one or two more pieces, I don't want Nick Sogard. When Nick Sogard was, when it was tweeted out that he was on his way to Sacramento today, we all knew what that meant. we all had that sense of doom. I don't want Nick Sogard on this roster. I don't think he's going to really contribute. And then, does this mean more Yoshida? I guess that's what I'd rather have. I feel dirty saying that. Andrew Monasterio had great numbers during the streak, but, 0 for whatever tonight. Let's see, 0 for 3 tonight with 2 strikeouts. These aren't the guys that are going to get you there. And that's life.
Yeah, and you mentioned, it did kind of force him now into a buying situation, and that is true because, now I feel like a month ago we were talking about, man, it's going to suck to see Sonny Gray pitching in a different uniform, but you have to do it because, it makes the most sense. Now they're talking possible extension with him. Like, that's how much the script is flipped, because of that streak. You're now talking about hanging on to 36, soon to be 37-year-old Sonny Gray. Like, I don't think that's something any of us would have thought of a month ago. And look, they already made a move, and unfortunately, due to circumstances out of their control, this one you can't blame really on anybody. That's already completely backfired on them. So part of the bad news today, before the game was even played, was that Curtis Meade, they now diagnosed him with a broken wrist. So now he's going to have to fly back to Boston. He'll see a hand specialist, and they'll determine if he needs surgery. And if that's the case, if he needs surgery, season's over. That's it. You're not seeing Curtis Meade until 2028, right? If everything keeps going the way it's going with the strike and all that. Potentially, if he doesn't need surgery, you might get him back late, in September or something. But already that trade has completely backfired. Personally, I didn't love the trade. We can get into it a little bit more, but I just think a guy that's been on his fifth team in under 3 years or something, I think trading Connolly early for a guy like that is a little too bold of a step to take. And look, I appreciate that Breslow's trying to, think outside the box and take his big swings, but feels like this one, I don't know, the injury is just like an omen. It's like, just, this is not, even if he was healthy, it probably wasn't going to work out very well. But yeah, already the Curtis Meade era, not off to a good start in Boston. Juan, your reaction to the injury and just everything that we know now about it.
I'm glad you brought up the fact that this doesn't fall on anyone. It doesn't fall on Craig Breslow. It doesn't fall on, hey, we want to use this to critique the trade. No, I mean, it's unfortunate what happened to him. I didn't agree with the trade. I didn't agree with giving up Connolly early for him. I felt like you could have used early, you know, mixed in with someone else, maybe a prospect, to go out there and try to get a big fish. If that's what you wanted to do, you wanted to trade away pitching, try to actually get someone that you can have the trust, that the fan base can have the trust in. Hey, this guy can actually help us win this season. That's how I felt. And it's unfortunate now, because now you look at that trade and, well, Early's not pitching, right? We don't know when he's supposed to come back. Now we don't have the guy that we traded Early for. Now they're going to have to trade something of even much more value, because teams, as I think, Terry, you brought this up in our group chat, teams know the Boston Red Sox are desperate for talent right now, especially on the offensive side. So they're going to have to give up something of much more value than Early. Not sure if Toley's going to be included in that conversation. You know, maybe their high-level prospects are going to have to be moved if they want to, you know, I don't know, entice the Astros to get back to the conversation, to the table with Peña, despite them saying, we're not trading Peña, but hey, what if we give you these top prospects? Are you then willing to do it? The Royals haven't said much, but what if you go out to the Royals and say, we'll trade you our top prospects, who's a shortstop, we'll include other prospects for your guy. You can start all over again. You can get rid of that contract and we'll take it. They're in a very difficult position now, because all teams know that the Boston Red Sox need offense, and the guy they brought in, we're not seeing him, as you said, until 2028. He's done for the season. So it's unfortunate.
I was up and down whether I liked the trade as far as, you know, my initial reaction. And I do Uber one or two nights a week. And typically Saturday night will be one of the nights, because that's the big money night. You know, I can make $400 or $500 in 10 to 12 hours, you know, so I do it on Saturdays. Occasionally I'll do it on Fridays as well. But someone texted me, not even a Red Sox fan, a Yankees fan that I'm just friends with, texted me a link and said, holy shit. Now, I talk with that guy mostly about politics, not as much about baseball. So I'm kind of disregarding it. But then a passing tweet happens right after it. And I got people in the car. I can't look. I'm just paralyzed. I'm just absolutely paralyzed by what might have just happened. And then I saw some other notifications that just kept saying Connelly Early. I'm like, oh no, we didn't just trade. Did we trade Connelly Early? And who the hell did we get? You know, did we get Tatis? Did we get my boy? Did we get, I don't know who else. And I've got like 8 minutes left to go on this ride before I can get them the hell out of my car so I can figure out what the hell just happened. And it was Connelly Early for Mead. And, you know, you look at the numbers on the surface for this year, they look great, you know, and I hadn't really paid attention to him. We didn't really have any reason to pay attention to him. And then when you did a deeper dive into the numbers, this year's an anomaly. And over the next 24, 48 hours, the thing that really pissed me off more than anything was watching the majority of Red Sox fans say, well, Connelly Early, you know, who really knows? He's unproven, you know, that they would cherry pick some metrics. He doesn't even look like he's that good. Okay. He's far more proven than Curtis Mead, who has only been good for 3 months of a 5-year career. And Red Sox fans are selling their souls. They're shitting all over Connelly Early over Curtis Mead. And then you're just ignoring that that was a massive price you paid to get a guy who's a bit of a wild card. That was a massive price. Okay, now let's look at the big picture. You need another big piece. How much more massive is that price going to be? And how do you afford it? How is Franklin Arias not automatically in the next deal? Whether it's a 3-month rental for Jeremy Peña. Do the Astros care that the Red Sox got brutally unlucky with this injury to Curtis Meade? No, they don't. They're gonna hold us right over the barrel. And you know what? We're not gonna get Peña because of it. And then let's also look at the fact that Breslow stayed in that tight circle of ex-Red Sox employees. That's still where he's operating. He didn't just do a deal with Jerry DePoto or Alex Anthopoulos or, you know, Andrew Friedman with a player that wasn't DFA'd. So it's hard to be optimistic here about what's going on. And you don't have Connelly Early anymore. You have Peyton Tolley, but guess what? He's about to blow past his career high of 104 innings. I think he's at 95, 96. So he'll blow past that in the next couple of starts. And then if this team can somehow stay on track, and the American League is so bad right now, we could still, without a major move, conceivably, we could still make the postseason. What's Peyton Tolley going to look like at that point? What's Sonny Gray going to look like? I mean, his next start's going to be interesting because he's coming off a bad one, and he's 36, and he wants an extension, by the way. You know, he'll be 38 at the start of that next season. So I hope we don't do it. But I don't know who you can trust in terms of sustainability. Maybe Ranger, because he's been on and off the injured list, so his innings aren't going to be super high. Jake Bennett, I don't have his career numbers up. He spent his entire minor league career in the national system, basically, until we got him in the Luis Perales trade last December. I don't know. I think there's a lot to be concerned about here.
Yeah, when that trade went down, my first reaction was, wait, Curtis Meade, as in the guy that the Rays gave up, or the guy that the Rays traded for and gave up Christopher Sanchez for? That's the only thing he's known for. He's known for being the guy that Philly sent to Tampa for Christopher Sanchez, and now Christopher Sanchez is like an ace. And you know, everyone looks back on that trade going, what the hell were the Rays doing? And I thought that like he'd been around for a lot longer. I didn't realize he's just only 25. But four other teams have given up on this guy. And now you just traded one of your best young, controllable starters for this guy. And I agree with Terry. Like, the narrative around Early, the pretzel twisting that Red Sox fans are doing, saying, well, you know, with the emergence of Jake Bennett, Connelly Early really had become expendable. Like, since when are 23-year-old left-handers who are proven at the big league level expendable in any circumstance? That's completely crazy to me. So the narrative shifting and the goalposts moving has been insane, because all of a sudden now Jake Bennett is the future Randy Johnson, and Connelly Early was just, he's fine, back-end starter. You people weren't saying that 2 months ago when Connelly was starting every 5 days. You were saying, oh, man, they really got something to this kid. Like, him and Tolley are going to anchor the rotation for years to come. And now he's with the Nationals, and you got Curtis Meade back. And look, the injury was completely bad luck. You know, it sucks. Not his fault, not anyone's fault, as you pointed out. But just looking at him, like, I pulled up, like, his Savant page. And first thing that jumped out was, wow, for a guy who plays third base, he can't throw. He's got, I don't know, he's in like the second percentile in arm strength or something like that. And then I watched him, and the batting stance is kind of weird. He's very fidgety. He's like, looks off balance. He's like leaning back, kind of like Duran does, but to even more of an extreme. I watched him field and like his throwing motion looks awkward. Like he just kind of looks like one of these guys that is athletic, but maybe is not a great baseball player. I don't know how else really to describe it, but again, he went from having 5 homers in his career for, you know, until this year. Now all of a sudden he's got 17. So, you know, and I guess they're saying how he overloaded his swing and he did a lot of work with it. Okay, and then I look at the comments that Paul Toboni made about the trade where he said, yeah, it took me by surprise because Curtis Mead was not someone that we were shopping. We didn't think anyone was really going to call us about him. And then Breslow calls up and says, hey, you want Connolly early for him? Like, Toboni was probably like, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, we can just end the conversation right there. And the comments he made after saying, yeah, you know, I give credit to Breslow because he really went out on a limb with this trade. What the hell does that mean? He went out on a limb. So even Toboni's telling you like, yeah, that's a pretty bold move to go after Curtis Mead because it might completely blow up in your face. But hey, give him credit. It's a bold move. Like, I think Toboni is kind of subtly telling you like, yeah, that's kind of a stupid trade. But hey, you know, good on him for having the guts to do it, I guess. So everything about it just, yeah, it just seems very off. And the injury sucks. But even before then, I'm like, I did not think that was a good trade.
Yeah, I think people live in this world where they feel that our opinions, right, or your opinion needs to stay the same no matter what information is provided. And I've seen this firsthand, for example, on Twitter, where started off the season, the first 2 months, I was very critical of Craig Breslow. I didn't like any of the signings. I didn't like any of the trades because guess what? Those guys weren't performing. And I did feel like there were better options out there. Once those players started turning things around, I was on the pod with you, Terry, and with Charlie, and I was out here defending Craig Breslow because I felt, based on the information, the new information that we received, right, whether it's Caleb Durbin and his performance, Wilson Contreras and his performance, Sonny Gray and his performance, yeah, the guys he brought in are the ones that are leading this team. So I'm going to change my opinion. But it's also okay for me to turn around and say, I don't agree with the trade. I felt like if you want to say Connolly early wasn't good enough to be the number 2 or number 3 starter on your team, that's fine. But teams out there know who Connolly early is. He's the guy that you threw out there in a playoff game against the Yankees and actually pitched well. The offense just didn't show up. Like, it hasn't been showing up for most parts of this season. You could have gone out there. You could have said, just like with the whole Rafael Devers situation, this guy's on the market. I want your best offer. And start negotiating from there. That's my biggest criticism of Craig Breslow so far. It's been the trading deadline. It's sort of like he feels like pressure from I don't know who, and he starts rushing and trying to move guys with the very first person that says, hey, yeah, I'm interested. What do you want? No, you ship these guys. You offer these guys. What's your best offer? And start negotiating with teams. That's what I need to see from Craig Breslow, because it's obvious the changes that need to be made, the additions that we need on the offensive side. How is he going to negotiate with those teams that we have been linked to, whether it's the Angels, whether it's the Royals, whether it's the Astros? How is he going to approach them, right? It's not about winning the trade, as he said. How is he going to approach them to try to get players that can actually give us a real shot? I do think that we can compete in this pathetic American League, but in order for us to have a real shot, we need to add to this offense because we just don't have enough.
I've said multiple times, not so much recently, but earlier in the season, I'm not trading Peyton Tolley or Connolly early. I'm not doing it. And then Jeremy came on and was like, well, what if it's for Skubal? Then I'd be like, okay, fine. For Skubal, I would do it. But that's it. And nobody on this podcast puts a higher premium than I do on players who can play at Fenway, whether it's hitting or pitching. when you can thrive in one of the most hostile environments in Major League Baseball, when you can strand base runners as a pitcher, pitch around traffic, get outs, stay composed, I put a massive premium on that. The David Price experience wasn't a total failure, but it wasn't comfortable, and it was very clear he could not handle this market. Chris and I have played patty cakes a lot lately in the war room, you know, all in good fun. And, you know, David Price's name came up, and I was thinking, I didn't mention this, but I was thinking, you know, David Price got utterly destroyed in that 2018 postseason in Yankee Stadium. He figured it out towards the back end of that Astros series and then was dominant throughout the World Series. Connelly, early in his fifth or sixth start, was asked to start game three of the wild card round last year. Wasn't his best outing, but I mean, he didn't get shelled. You know, we still had a chance to win the game. And, you know, it's nice to see Tolley emerge. It's nice to see Jake Bennett emerge. But I can't go as back as far as the 80s or 90s like some of you guys might. But in my lifetime, the Red Sox just don't develop guys like this. They just haven't done it. They did it with Lester. Kind of did it with Buchholz. That's about it. That's about it. You know, some people might mention E-Rod, but he mostly came up in that Oriole system. He was basically a AAA guy by the time we got him. So it's painful to do it. And Breslow's ass is on the line. I still think it's on the line. And, you know, we don't have him anymore. we don't have Connelly early. And I don't know. My expectations are pretty low for what could happen here. And Jason, you mentioned in the war room earlier, and go ahead and give the take. We might just be better off. We might just be better off calling up Franklin Arias.
And I wonder, like, why, because now you're hearing all these reports they want a shortstop, right? So now they're targeting Otto Lopez from the Miami Marlins. And I really like Otto Lopez as a player. I really like him. The problem is Breslow's kind of screwed himself here because he's already set the market too high for himself. So if he calls the Marlins about Otto Lopez, who is far and away a better player than Curtis Meade, the Marlins are absolutely going to ask for Peyton Tolley. It's going to start with Peyton Tolley because, you know, whoever is in charge over there, they're going to say, well, you gave up Connelly early for Curtis Meade, who no one else really wanted. So we're not going to give you Otto Lopez for anything less than Peyton Tolley and one of your other young pitchers, Ianson or Kyson Witherspoon or something like that. So Breslow's already kind of screwed himself with this trade because these bigger fish that now supposedly he's going to want to target, well, the asking price just skyrocketed because of what you did with the early trade. You set the market too high for yourself. So now what's going to happen, I think, is that he's going to go after guys like Otto Lopez and, you know, whoever else, and he's going to get priced out because they're going to ask for too much and he's going to get skittish, and, you know, then the narrative will change. Right? They won't get an Otto Lopez. They won't get any of these guys. And then post deadline, he'll come out and say, well, we're looking for, you know, a controllable, you know, infielder or something like that. But we do have Franklin Arias and we think that he's close. Like, that's when that narrative will change. I just don't see the point in giving up more of your pitching assets, you know, for either a rental or for one of these guys when it looks like Arias is the real deal. Like, he's already hitting home runs in Worcester. He's a right-handed bat. He's 20 years old. He's your best prospect. Like, I just think that's probably the more prudent course for Craig Breslow right now because he's going to get priced out in these conversations. And I don't want him panicking because his first trade blew up in his face through no fault of his own, but it did blow up in his face, like, almost immediately. So what I don't want him doing is now panicking and saying, oh, I can't leave this deadline with Curtis Meade being the only acquisition I made. Because, as you said, he knows his ass is on the line. So what I'm worried about is that he's going to make a panic move for someone like Otto Lopez or someone of that caliber, and he's going to trade away, like, Ianson and a bunch of, like, your top pitching prospects, and everyone's going to go wholly overpay. Because you mentioned it, like, they don't develop pitching like this. They haven't in years. It's the one thing Breslow can kind of hang his hat on, is that, like, he has finally brought pitching development to the Boston Red Sox, for which they have not had for years. And now you look at it, like, Toley is a, you know, he's a frontline starter now, and they developed that. Connelly Early was a frontline starter. They developed him. Bennett is turning into that. Again, these other guys I mentioned, Ianson and Kyson Witherspoon, they might develop into frontline starters. So, yes, you have a lot of good young pitching. Don't trade all of it away in a panic move because you feel the need to, you know, save your job, or you need to justify the Curtis Meade deal or whatever. That's what I'm worried about. So, yeah, in a way, I kind of hope that they just play their cards right, don't do anything stupid. And you know what? If you need a right-handed bat sometime down the line, Franklin Arias is right there. And he can come up and, I think, make an immediate impact. That's what I'm hoping. But with Breslow and how erratic he can get, I don't know. It scares me.
This is not so much a criticism of Craig Breslow, at least from my point of view, but there's a real chance here that the Red Sox don't do anything else from here on out because of what you just said. The asking price is going to go skyrocket at this point, and it will start with Peyton Toley. And I hope to God that Craig Breslow doesn't panic and trade Peyton Toley, because that's it. You got rid of Early. Toley's a part of your future. So I'm really hoping that, yeah, let's go the route of an Arias if the asking price starts with Peyton Toley. I don't want to let him go. I'd rather just offer Brian Bayo. That's, I don't know how much he's worth right now, but I don't know, man. I really do hope that he doesn't panic and try to put Peyton Toley in conversations. Try to figure out a way to, I don't know, if you want to offer up other prospects, great, but don't let it be starting with him. No.
I think there's a 0% chance Peyton Toley gets traded. I don't think it's going to happen. You know, he's almost the face of your franchise at this point. You know, there's no bigger celebrity on the Boston Red Sox right now than Peyton Toley. And he's cheap. That's the other thing, you know, with Connelly Early. You know, if you were to pursue a free agent of his ability, that's a $100 million contract. And you just had him for $720,000 a year for the next couple of years. You know, that's another painful aspect here of that trade. But the fear should not be whether they may trade Toley, because like I said, 0% chance. Am I a little scared they might trade Bennett? I could see that happening, I guess. You know, sell high. I mean, I never heard Bennett's name until he was called up. I rolled my eyes. I'm like, here we go. This is a Heim Bloom desperately pull someone up from Worcester type thing. And, you know, and I didn't even know he was in the Perales trade till recently. So I knew nothing about Jake Bennett, but you can't really afford to trade any pitching on your big league club now. You need every one of these guys. You need Gray. You need Suarez. You need Patrick Sandoval. And you need Toley. You need Bennett. And as this offense cools down, I mean, you need guys that can go out there and give you six innings of two or three run ball. And you still have a full rotation of that, at least at the moment. I don't know if they're going to be pitching that way, a few of them in September, like I said earlier. But I think realistically here, what they need to do is they need to trade for a bigger contract, because the bigger the contract, the lighter the package is. You know, and I don't want to, you know, I feel like I keep saying the same two or three names every time, you know, we get into that territory. But I think that's what you have to do. Short of another team like valuing Meyer way more than we are, I don't know how you get the Otto Lopez type guys at this point.
Yeah, it's true. They're probably going to have to look into someone that's looking to unload a contract, right? And whether it's just because it's too pricey or the player's aging out, like, you know, first guy that comes to mind is like a Matt Chapman, right? Like, he's still owed some pretty decent money by the Giants. He's having a very down year. They're looking to blow it up. Does Chapman really make sense to the Red Sox? I mean, kind of, but not ideally. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, that's the kind of contract that if they made that trade, you're right, you're not giving up a really rich package for him. You're doing the Giants a favor. So, you know, that trade wouldn't hurt as much, but I don't think Chapman really helps you. So, yeah, unfortunately, these guys, again, the Otto Lopez's of the world, and you can forget about Bobby Witt or any of these guys. I mean, forget about that, right? Yeah, it just, he set the market too high, and I think that's going to come back and bite him. So I kind of agree with Juan. I don't think you're going to see much over the next couple of days in terms of Red Sox making major moves. I could see some small stuff like a middle reliever, backup catcher, something like that. But I don't think any big fireworks are coming. And that's honestly, that might be for the best, because
it's not to say that he's not going to try. Mm-hmm. Right? Or again, a criticism of Breslow. No, I think he just set the bar a little too high, and the asking price is going to be unrealistic. And I don't think he's going to go ahead and just wipe out the entire farm system for any one player, unless we're talking about, you know, the 1%, which I don't think those guys are available. So the asking price is going to be too high for him to trade for a valuable piece, in my opinion. I hope he proves me wrong and he can, you know, finagle a deal with some of these guys. But yeah, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, I think Arias makes the most sense. You know, he hasn't had a big sample size at AAA, but Zach Neto is going to cost a lot. Jeremy Pena is going to cost a lot. What will end up being, he's controllable through 27, but we know we're not playing baseball next year. And Passan just mentioned multiple owners have told him, yeah, we're just not going to be playing next year. So, you know, a lot of people are resigned to that now, you know, in high places across the league. So just see what you have. I remember in 2017, a lot of Red Sox fans wanted Dombrowski to go get Mike Moustakas. And, you know, I was kind of lukewarm to that. I mean, he has a lot of power, but he was a lefty. He's not a high average guy. Struck out probably more than I was comfortable with. But you ended up with Eduardo Nunez and then a Devers call-up. And I think, without looking at the numbers, I think Devers was actually pretty good those last couple of months of 2017. 2018 was painful for most of the year. He kept striking out on high fastballs, just like Michael Chavis was. But I don't know. I think that's the best move, honestly, for now. And I didn't think of it till Jason brought it up. But I don't know what you do. I'd still try to ship out Duran. Obviously, we're not getting much, but I'd still remove that personality from the clubhouse. I don't know if you want to mess with Christian Campbell at this point. He is starting to turn it around. He's hit a couple of home runs recently. The one thing that's still true about him is he gets on base via the walks. He's got a very high on base So maybe, I don't know, maybe you see what you have there. But I don't know. I'm not optimistic.
Yeah, the latest reports for Jeremy Peña is the Astros are not shopping Peña. They're going to be acting as buyers. With Nadal, they're saying Arias is going to be a part of that, has to be a part of that package deal. And I'm not doing that. And I don't think Breslow's doing that either. So those are two guys that you can basically just mark off as not going to happen. And then with CJ Abrams, again, I think it's, I haven't seen any reports about what they're asking for, but you know the asking price is going to be steep. And again, Arias is going to have to be a part of that package deal. I just don't think the Boston Red Sox are trying to do that swap with what you mentioned, Jason. You know, no baseball next season. You don't have to spend the money. You just bring them up in 2018, a cheap 2028, a cheap contract. The more I think about it, I think Arias has to be the way to go here and try to build, I don't know, find something else, put your chips on the table for a catcher, because you definitely do need a catcher. Wong and Narvaez aren't the answers there. They're not a part of the future. If you want to try to, you know, reach for one of those guys that, you know, the guy in Colorado, see if you can try to put something on the table for them to persuade them to move him. I'd say that's the way to go. Try to get a catcher, try to improve there, and just bring up Arias. I agree with you there.
Another move I brought up recently, maybe the Orioles are looking at the Pete Alonso deal and they're like, you know, I don't know. Maybe try to, if you're going to take on a bad contract, put Yoshida in it, put Story in it. Their contracts run up at the end of next season, which I think we can all agree is not going to happen. So they would only be taking the balance of this year's money, which I think is extremely reasonable. And that, more importantly than anything, it unclogs your DH spot, which you have to do anyway. Because that's where a guy like Alonso would go. I'm not going to go into a Devers thing, but that's where Devers would go. You know, I'm still a Tatis guy. I know the home runs are down, but if you look at the save on chart, it's dark red in a lot of important areas. You know, you can offset some of the money that way. I don't know if I'd put Arias in that deal or not. I mean, if it lessens the overall package, maybe I do it. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. But those are the big contracts, you know. Alonso, Tatis, Devers. We could probably come up with one or two more. Corey Seager got floated recently, and I want none of that. You know, he's going to play 90 games a year if you're lucky. But that's what I would do. I Alonso would be interesting. That's a big shot to right a wrong there.
Yeah, I agree. I think something like Alonso would be kind of exciting. I don't think they're really, you know, poised to do it, but I think it would be interesting. And it's a good way to kind of, again, take the money off Baltimore's hands, you know, lesser package, that kind of thing. But yeah, I think this is one of the few times where I'm actually saying go with your internal candidates. You know, I agree with Juan, like go get a catcher or something, maybe some bullpen help, but don't overextend yourself this year. I think the strike is playing a big factor in this deadline as well. I think that's why it's been so quiet up to this point. I'm good with just internal candidates. Arias, I'm willing to give Campbell another shot at some point. He does look like he's starting to turn it around. I prefer they do that than overextend and make a potentially catastrophic trade, because I just don't think, I think the market's too high this time around. So
for what it's worth, Pete Alonso has played every game this year. He's hitting 251, which is right at his career average. His on base is 347, which is a tick higher than his career average. Slugging is down a little bit. OPS is down a little bit. OPS plus just under what his average is. But he's hit 22 home runs, driven in 67. You know, that's not a bust of a contract. I don't know what Breslow was afraid of, but it worked out. It's working out for Baltimore.
Yeah, no, I mean, he had a slow start, but he's really turned around. He's turned into the Pete Alonso of old out there. So, hey, I'd be down for it. I mean, you know, I would still like to have Alonso in a Red Sox uniform, but I just, again, I don't see any big moves like that really on the horizon. So we'll see what they end up doing. We've got almost, less than a week, right, till the deadline. Deadline is Monday, so we'll see. They've got, you know, the rest of this series against the Athletics, and they got a tough Dodger series heading right into the deadline. So that could be some serious ass-kicking over the weekend, depending on how that all goes. But we got to get through the Athletics series first. So we've got another game tomorrow night, another 9:40 start. Patrick Sandoval, one of those guys that Terry was mentioning that you're going to have to rely on now, he is taking the mound tomorrow night. He's going up against Jacob Lopez, who is a 28 years old, ERA over 6. Seems like kind of a journeyman guy that they've just kind of thrown in there. So once again, you're going up against an Athletics team that's putting a bad pitcher out there. You know, he's a lefty, so let's see, you know, what this lineup can do. But how do you see that one going tomorrow? Juan, I'll start with you.
Yeah, another one of those guys that has an ERA of over 6. The problem here, as you just mentioned, he's a lefty. So I'm going to assume here that we're going to have the Romies of the world going out there. Instead of Siegler, Yoshida's not going to play. It's going to be the same formula that we saw today. And I'm still going to have the same question marks about the offense. Can they put up enough runs? They showed that they couldn't do that today. One of the major changes I do hope we see tomorrow is Connor Wong going out there rather than Carlos Narvaez. I feel like Connor Wong is putting up, you know, better at-bats at this point. Go out there with him, see what he can do. Put Yoshida in there, no matter if it's a lefty-on-lefty matchup. And Patrick Sandoval, he's been serviceable. Of course, we're asking a lot of a guy who basically didn't pitch for two years. I mean, so can he go out there and maybe only allow 2 runs at most and give this Red Sox offense an opportunity to maybe put up 3 runs? We're going to have to wait and see here. I'm going to pick the Red Sox to win this game tomorrow. I think that we will put up enough runs, at least 3 runs, to be able to win. Our bullpen is number 1 in Major League Baseball. If we can get the lead and hand it to the bullpen, which is rested because they didn't, you know, we didn't throw out our best arms there today. I think we have a chance to win tomorrow. So I'm going to pick the Red Sox.
You know what? I'm picking Sacramento. Jacob Lopez, you know, you look at his numbers, ERA over 6. Yeah, that looks bad. He's only given up in 4 starts, and one of them was only an inning and 2/3, and he pitched well. So I don't know why it was so abbreviated, but he's only given up 6 earned runs in 4 starts the entire month of July. His last outing against Minnesota was scoreless. He gave up 2 earned runs to the Nationals in the start before that. So, you know, maybe this Red Sox lineup is cooling down a little bit. I think Oakland is kind of, or Sacramento has kind of, you know, I could see their confidence rising, you know, as the series has gone on. So, you know, some interesting hitters in there. They don't have Langeliers. You would think that would be a death blow to the series, but you know, the vibes are still good. You could tell they're trying to win. They're, you know, I think Sacramento beats us tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a tough one to call because I just don't know much about Jacob Lopez. You know, obviously numbers don't look great, but you know, as you mentioned, his last couple starts, not terrible. And I do worry about Sandoval in a stadium like that. You know, it's a bit of a boombox for hitters. So, you know, I worry that he might get touched up early. And, you know, if he gives up three or four, you know, early on, I could see Tracy kind of pulling the plug and, you know, suddenly it's a Ryan Watson game or something like that. So I could see it getting away from them. I think I'll pick the Red Sox, though. I just think that the lineup will do enough. I think Sandoval will be, he'll be okay. Even if he gives up two or three, I do think this lineup should be able to get to this Athletics pitching staff, because it's not just the starter. Their bullpen is not that great either. And so I think you should be able to get to them. So, you know, hopefully the lineup isn't terrible tomorrow. I know, you know, Juan, as you mentioned, probably going to be a Romy game, probably going to be, you know, more Monasterio and guys like that. So, but again, streaky hitters. So maybe they were, you know, unlucky today. Maybe they, you know, catch fire tomorrow, right? It's just kind of Jekyll and Hyde with this lineup. So, but I think they'll do enough. I think they'll do enough. And I think the Red Sox will pull it out. So we'll see what happens. We'll be back on the air Thursday night. So keep an eye out on your YouTube feeds for that. Otherwise, stay glued to your passing tweets, and we'll see if anything more comes down the pike as we get closer to the trade deadline. But should be an interesting